This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. And to begin this next segment, Meghna and I are going to tell you what we had for lunch. You go first, Meghna.
Okay. Fried chickpea fritter sandwich with hummus. Yum. Chopped with cucumber. Yum. And tomatoes. Yum. And some delicious pickled onions.
Sounds great.
What'd you have?
Okay, also pretty tasty. It was a barbecued seitan sandwich with a side of rosemary French fries. And I'm going to quote Mark Navin, our executive producer, after he tasted the fries. He said, "Why isn't everything flavored with rosemary?"
Exactly. But Anthony, there is a reason we are talking about lunch, other than to brag.
That's right. No, the reason is today our lunch came from a food truck right down the street from us on Commonwealth Avenue. It's the food truck from the restaurant Clover. It's part of a nascent industry in Boston. The city began licensing food trucks to sell on city streets just 8 months ago. And since then, 19 operators have signed up. Some of them, though, are struggling, and they want the city to do more to help them.
In fact, one of them fired off an open letter to City Hall saying, "Despite the media portrayal that the food truck industry in Boston is thriving, in fact, the city isn't doing enough to help food trucks succeed."
So we're going to talk about the food truck industry for the next few minutes, where it's headed and whether the city should be doing more. Our coverage begins with WBUR's Adam Ragusea, who went to see how the city's food trucks are faring through this first winter.
There you are, ma'am. That'll be $9.50, please. Enjoy that. Have a good day.
Back in 2003, Patrick Gilmartin and Adam Gaudreau were working the line at Rialto, trying to one-up each other with the creative staff meals they'd cook for themselves after service. Today, they're selling General Tso's duck tongue tacos on Stewart Street from a truck they own, aptly named Staff Meal.
How's your day been so far?
It's been a little slow today. It's a little cold out. You know, I think people got used to the nice 50-degree days.
It's no surprise that winter is bad for food trucks, but Gaudreau says it's been worse than he ever imagined.
If the business stays the same, you know, 2012 could be an impossible year to get through for sure.
And he doesn't just blame the weather. In that open letter he wrote, Gaudreau begged city regulators to set aside more parking spots for food trucks in the only neighborhood he says has been profitable for him, Back Bay.
My name is Edith Murnane. I'm the director of food initiatives for the mayor and for the city of Boston. Parking spaces are a public amenity. And so to take away a public amenity for a private enterprise has to be balanced because there are lots of people vying for that space.
I don't know that I would say the problem is people aren't getting the choice spots.
While the staff meal guys shiver in their truck, Air Muir of Clover Food Lab sits in an office above his flagship brick-and-mortar restaurant in Harvard Square, lording over a budding empire of food trucks. He's not worried about going out of business this year. Most of his trucks operate in Cambridge, and he says they average about six times the business of his one truck that uses city spots in Boston. The problem, as he sees it, is that Boston won't let him stake out a permanent breakfast, lunch, and dinner presence. He's supposed to move around and share spots with other operators.
I think a donut truck, a cookie truck, can do really well without a day-to-day presence because they're really exciting. You see it, you jump, you want to buy it. But for the type of food we're trying to build, that's a much more healthy food. I sell you because your friend tells you how good it is and you overcome a concern you might have had, right? And then you become a customer that comes every single day.
So Air is currently Monday through Friday for breakfast and lunch at the BU Bridge.
Again, Edith Murnane, who administers food trucks for Boston.
That's pretty consistent. Having said that, we're not looking for a food truck to look like a bricks and mortar. And when you are at a location for 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, you begin to look like and compete with the food establishments as if you were a bricks and mortar.
Have you gotten complaints from restaurant owners?
One or two.
That doesn't sound like a lot.
No.
And she wants to keep it that way. Murnane says her office has been able to nip conflicts in the bud by keeping the trucks circulating and trying to avoid obvious competition, like, say, a cupcake truck in front of a bakery.
Today I have vanilla on chocolate, salted caramel on chocolate, I have banana pecan with the...
Diane DeMarco has her cupcakery truck parked on Clarendon Street, one of only two spots she says do well for her, the other being in front of the Boston Public Library. What she thinks would help is if she could set up shop right next to other food trucks. This is known in the trade as clustering, and you can see it in action on City Hall Plaza in the summertime and right now in Dewey Square, which is a spot administered by the Rose Kennedy Greenway.
It's the clustering that brings people. They feel like they have a choice. It brings groups.
So, like, maybe have three or four trucks like yours around the corner on Copley Square?
Yeah, exactly.
Copley Square would be great.
One more time, Edith Murnane.
Except that you have people who need parking for retail, parking for farmers markets. So to take out a city block for food truck parking becomes problematic.
Murnane says she's considering locations for other clusters, but she's looking more at neglected areas of the city where food trucks could introduce fresh vitality. That's one of her chief objectives for allowing food trucks in the first place.
Give me an example.
East Boston. East Boston would be a great location.
Maverick?
Yeah. It probably has the second or third highest pedestrian traffic in the city.
But Diane DeMarco from the Cupcakery says high traffic isn't always enough, something she found out the hard way in Jamaica Plains' Eggleston Square.
The city probably had the misconception that if you put a food truck in an area that maybe needs revitalization, people will go, but it has not happened. I think our industry is just too new right now. I mean, maybe in the future, several years down the line, maybe that could work. But right now, we need all the support we can get, you know, our foot on the ground.
In the meantime, DeMarco says she's looking to get back into book publishing. Maybe she'll keep the truck going on the weekends in the summertime when there are more people walking the sidewalks looking for a treat.
Hi there, how are you?
Can I get three, please?
Absolutely.
And that report from Radio Boston's Adam Ragusa, who joins us in the studio now. And Adam, we heard from three operators there. Each of them said they're struggling, at least in the city itself, of the city of Boston. Do we have any hard data on how the industry's doing overall?
Not really. Of those 19 initial trucks that signed on with the city's program, six have since suspended operation since the summer for various reasons. You know, fill bellies went. Bricks and mortar. Some of them just took the winter off. One of them got broken into. None of the truck owners that I talked to were eager to open up their books for me, but three or four of them told me that they felt like they were not going to get through the year. Others, like the Bon Me truck, which is running on Dewey Square right now, say, you know, they're doing a little bit better, but that's in part because they massively scaled back for the winter. They laid off all their part-time employees, and they're just kind of running the trucks themselves.
You also mentioned that Clover has several trucks, and the ones that operate in Cambridge are doing much better than the one we visited today right down the road from here on Commonwealth Avenue near the BU Bridge. What makes Cambridge different?
It's an important point because, you know, basically Cambridge licensed a few trucks and then last year instituted a moratorium on all new trucks when they realized that this was going to be a thing. You know, people are signing up. This is an exciting industry. And they needed to sort of stop things while they developed a regulatory framework for it. So people like Clover that got in under the wire have been operating with a large degree of freedom and not a large degree of competition for a while, but that's about to change. Cambridge is looking at licensing some new spots along the Charles River this spring. Brookline is thinking about piloting a program of their own this spring, and that's what makes this story about the city of Boston's program so important. Everybody's looking to see how Boston is doing, to see how this experiment goes, so that they can start to figure out how they're going to handle this budding new industry around which there's so much excitement. I should say that of those 19 trucks that are signed up with the City of Boston's program right now, that's a small part of the ecosystem in Greater Boston. Some people estimated as many as 50, 60 trucks in Greater Boston at this point.
Well, we've certainly come a long way from those old roach coaches where you would just get, what, burgers and bagels forth and so on. So listeners, have you sampled food truck fare lately? And do you welcome food trucks to the streets of Boston or wherever you live? Should city government do more to help them or should they do less? We'd love to hear from you, especially if you're from a traditional brick and mortar business, and give us your thoughts about what you feel about this. Do you feel threatened by these new restaurants on wheels? Are they getting special treatment? Give us a call at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also comment at radioboston.org and find us on Facebook and Twitter. And I should say there's already a pretty robust conversation on radioboston.org about this. Let me introduce now Ron Sarney. He's the owner, the co-owner of Boston's Grilled Cheese Nation food truck, and he's also the president of the Boston Area Food Truck Association. Ron Sarney, great to have you. Welcome.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
So first first of all, really basic question. Give us the case for food trucks. What do they bring to the urban landscape that wasn't already there?
Well, I think at the beginning, the promise of food trucks was revenue, jobs, and community. But most importantly, I think this is all about entrepreneurism.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a brand new industry. A year ago, food trucks were banned in the streets of Boston. And I think the city has done a fabulous job in supporting this new industry and doing everything they can within their confines to help the industry work.
Well, in Adam's piece, we just heard some complaints that the city isn't doing enough, that they should be making more parking spaces available in parts of the city like Back Bay, for example. Do you agree with that? Does the city, you said the city's doing a fantastic job. Does that mean you disagree with the criticism we just heard?
Absolutely.
All right.
I do. I think the city.
So where's the problem then? I mean, we heard a problem outlined by some food truck operators.
Right.
Where's the problem?
Right. Well, I think that we can't look to the city to build an industry. I mean, that's not their role. They've given us opportunity. And if there's obstacles in our way building the industry, that's when entrepreneurism takes place.
Mm-hmm.
That's when we have to go around, we have to go under, we have to go over or through it. But we need to turn obstacles into opportunities. And then those opportunities will become successful.
Adam, chime in here.
Well, that said, I just fielded a phone call from a food truck operator right before we went on the air who wanted us to point out, and I think it's a valid point, that the city sets aside parking spaces for valet parking for bricks and mortar restaurants. They set aside space on sidewalks for al fresco dining. There are many ways in which municipalities do things to make public amenities available for private businesses, and why should food trucks be any different?
Interesting. Well, maybe someone can answer that question for us, is Kara Bruton. She's the economic development director for the town of Brookline, and as we mentioned, other municipalities in the regions are starting to look at allowing food trucks on public property. Brookline is among them. So, Kara Bruton, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Good to have you. Let me ask you just right off the top. I understand that. Let's start with what Brookline is doing. What are the issues at play in Brookline when it comes to allowing food trucks or not?
The issues in Brookline are similar to what we're hearing in the city of Boston, as well as other outlying communities in Cambridge, Somerville, and even Newton is considering food trucks. We are excited to be starting a pilot program that will be a six-month program at this point. We have received 9 applications, and that will start probably in the next month.
Hmm. You have some reservations about, let's say, opening this industry in a way that would make it too big. What would your reservations be around this?
During the pilot program, the best thing we can do is not do any harm. Mm-hmm. And that means both to our existing brick and mortars, both to stores as well as to our restaurants in town.
And what's the potential harm?
Potential harm is at a time when the economy is tanking and when our restaurants are paying very high rents just to be in Brookline, as well as the meals tax that goes to the town, they're in competition with they could be in competition with food trucks pulling up using public property, which is subsidizing a private industry.
Sure.
And, you know, there are questions as to what end. We do see lots of press about how food trucks liven areas, and that's certainly true, especially in neighborhoods where there's underutilization of, there's not as many choices for food. Brookline is full of lots of great restaurants, lots of variety, so I can't say we have that public need in town. On the
sure.
other hand, we're part of the metro Boston area, and the industry's changing around us, and we need to respond and try it out.
Adam, I want to come to you in a second. I just want to get Ron Sarney. Kara brought up a couple of points here that I want you to respond to. That is the idea that food trucks might threaten existing businesses, brick-and-mortar businesses that are already there.
Mm-hmm.
Fair point?
Fair point. And that's what the city of Boston was very careful in designing their program. And we looked at many other cities. And I think it became a very they wanted it, and it became a very democratic and fair process.
Another point that Kara raised, and we've had some writing about this on RadioBoston.org, and that is food trucks as a way to sort of enliven parts of the city. I think that's a good point.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There's something that happens when clustering takes effect, or when more than one truck is around, and it becomes very festive, and people come out and they they exchange ideas and thoughts, and they meet each other, and it really does go to community.
Adam, we have a ton of calls, but I want to get you back in this conversation. What did you hear there from Kara Bruton that you wanted to chime in on?
Oh, I didn't.
Oh, sorry.
It's okay.
I thought I saw you put your hand.
Yeah, I know. That's how we do things around here. But
Well, let's go to the calls. Let's go to listeners. If you want to chime in about food trucks, about how you think about them, what the city should do to be more hospitable to food trucks, what food trucks add to the urban landscape, give us a call, 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Let's go to Pam, who's calling from Jamaica Plain. Hi, Pam.
Hi there. How's it going?
Very well, thanks.
I just wanted to say that I love the food trucks, and I'm really excited that there are more of them popping up. I used to live in Philadelphia, and there's a huge stretch near UPenn where you would just go when you were looking for a quick lunch, and there's just all these options out there, and I definitely think that Boston could do with that.
All right. So you were you saw there in Philadelphia a sort of clustering effect of food trucks, it sounds like.
Exactly, and especially just for lunches when there's all these, when you're busy and can't really get out of the office for that long, it's fabulous.
Pam, thanks for the call. Ron Sarney, let me come to you. You've traveled the country looking at emerging food truck cultures in other cities.
Yes.
How does Boston stack up, or what do you see out there? Where's the potential?
Well, actually, I think Boston is actually becoming the model for other cities. Recently, two officials from L.A., or two food truck people from L.A. came to study our program and bring back their ideas or our ideas to the L.A. City Council. As you know, you may have heard, L.A. is kind of just crazy out there. You can drive anywhere you want, and territorial disputes happen, and people fist fights, and it's crazy. But now I just came back from Miami and look at the food truck scene down there, and that was really inspiring.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, the city council said to people, food truck community in Boston, I mean in Miami, forget it. No city streets. So
you mean no food trucks on any city streets?
No food trucks on
any
city streets.
So how do they deal with that?
They become very entrepreneurial, and they create these clusters at regular locations. For instance, I was at on Tuesday, every Tuesday, at the Johnson & Wales University, which is a culinary college down in Miami. There's 20 food trucks, and it's great food. I had yucca fries with oxtail gravy.
Oh, boy. Kara, you're nodding your head. Is that a model that a city like Brookline might consider? I mean, is there enough space, land in Brookline for such a model?
There's absolutely some properties that are underutilized in town. And one thing that we're excited to do with this pilot program is to use it as a true test. So, for example, Ron has told us about the benefits of having food trucks leave their, customers of food trucks leaving dollars at retail stores nearby. And we can test that with this pilot. There is a building that's one block off of Coolidge Corner, not in the heart of everything, and we will be relying on the food trucks tweeting to their customers, and then we will be able to measure and see whether those customers are also increasing dollars spent at our retailers.
Let's take a couple more calls. Jennifer is calling from Groveland. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, today.
You're on the air. What's on your mind, Jennifer?
Well, I don't have a lot of experience with food trucks myself, but my thought is this. Historically, a food truck was something that was quick and affordable. And just listening to the last speaker, yucca fries and aqua gravy doesn't sound like it's something, common and or that affordable for a quick lunch. And I'm wondering if that's something to consider. Yes, it's fun to have a gourmet truck, but how many people can pay $4 for a cupcake every day or, for something that's a little more gourmet that you would expect when you go and sit down in a formal establishment, a restaurant?
Well, Jennifer, it's a great point. Let me put it to Ron Sarney. I mean, it seems like, we heard in Adam's piece some of the food trucks that were struggling. Is Jennifer's point that, we're not giving away this food, obviously? Is that one of the reasons why, perhaps?
Well, the food is very affordable. And I think a $7 or $8 average ticket, and mm-hmm. you get actually a very nice lunch. And the example of the yucca fries is maybe a little extreme, but our trucks in the city of Boston have a lot of very healthy food and very good food. at a very reasonable price.
And I guess I'd say, too, I noticed, Adam, when you and I went over to Clover today, and I don't mean to sort of provide free publicity for Clover, but their sandwiches were $5 a piece.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, a little bit cheaper than, or significantly cheaper than a sandwich you'd get in a restaurant.
I ate at tons of food trucks over the course of reporting the story that we aired earlier, you know, and the price points are really, really striking. My personal favorite is Banh Mi, which, for the listeners who don't know, the Banh Mi sandwich is this wonderful relic of French colonialism in Vietnam, where you get, like, roast pork and pickled vegetables and other Vietnamese ingredients in a baguette, kind of slathered with pate. And it's like, it's great. They hand you a sandwich. It's the size of your forearm, you know, and it's $6. I mean, the price points that they are able to manage at these trucks are really, really impressive. And Kara, I mean, I feel like the question that raises is, does that indicate, and maybe your pilot will answer this question for us, does that indicate that maybe the trucks are kind of catering to a very different customer than would the bricks and mortar restaurants nearby?
I think that's something we'll have to look and see. We do have restaurants right now in Coolidge Corner, Washington Square, Brookline Village, and even Putnam Circle that serves a wide range of price values. And we have food everywhere from Tibetan, Russian. We have lots of Vietnamese noodle bars and at all price points, and even some really great comfort food. Places like the Fireplace that, you know, they have a lot of their food locally sourced. And so it'll be a challenge to be outdone by a brick and mortars, but it's something we're open to look at.
Kara, I'm curious about something. I mean, we're talking about a relatively new phenomenon in Boston, but the idea of food on wheels isn't in and of itself anything new. There have been ice cream trucks, hot dog carts. How does a city like Brookline regulate those businesses up to this point? In other words, what's different about this new industry?
Yeah, so food trucks are certainly not new in the town of Brookline. We've had, beyond the ice cream trucks and the construction trucks that are all over town, we have what is lovingly known as Eddie's Truck at Brookline High School. It's been there for 30 years. It's gone through a couple of different ownerships. They do more than just the typical construction truck. They serve pizza and other food, and they've been there illegally for the past 30 years. We don't allow any food sales within 1,000 feet of schools, but they've been there. So we are, one thing that this pilot will do is have us look at the recently adopted regulations by the selectmen, and as the industry continues to evolve, I imagine we will be doing it.
Let's take a couple more calls. We've got a lot of folks that want to get in on this conversation. Arik is calling from Cambridge. I think I'm pronouncing that right, Arik?
You got it.
All right, great. What's on your mind?
Well, I did a little trip this summer checking out various cities and just to see their food and wine scenes, and Portland, Oregon is the leader for the sort of food cart, food truck scene. Blows away what Boston's doing. Portland, Oregon's a population smaller than Boston. They have 650 food carts.
650. Why does this? Why am I not surprised that Portland, Oregon, leads the way in food trucks? Arik, thanks so much for that. Ron Sarney, any idea about sort of a reasonable target number? I mean, what we're talking about, 19 licensed food trucks today in Boston. Portland, Oregon has 620. I mean, where's the sort of where's the neighborhood that we ought to be approaching in terms of numbers?
I think that in the next couple of years, we'll see 50 to 100 food trucks in the greater Boston area.
Right. So we've got a ways to go.
We do. And it's a brand new industry.
Yeah, right. Let's go to Bettina, who's calling from Cambridge. Hi, Bettina.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just would really like to point out the comparative advantage that a food truck has over a bricks and mortar establishment in meeting changing and kind of progressive food needs in keeping with current research in food and nutrition. For example, a bricks and mortar establishment would have a really hard time, you know, sort of changing on a dime and providing new fare, where a food truck can really be up and running much more quickly and is able to move around to address the changing needs. I'm a Brookline resident, and in front of my son's elementary school, there is routinely an ice cream truck. And the parents there, we just had a food group meeting this morning where we talked about how we could get better, healthier snacks to the students. And having a food truck, for example, like Clover, parked in front of the elementary school there, which, you know, would have to be authorized by the town of Brookline, would be a huge improvement over the ice cream truck that is currently there.
It sort of makes me sad to think about the traditional good humor man being displaced by these new fancy food trucks, much as I approve of them. Cara Bruton, what do you hear there from Bettina?
We hear that from many residents in Brookline, and along with it, you know, what she was speaking with as far as having healthier choices very nearby for the school kids. We do also see when a store fixes itself up, the store next door will fall in line and do the same thing. There is nothing like competition. And I expect that when some of these food trucks show up, there will be restaurants that will have to be more nimble in order to keep up with where the customers are going. We have one existing restaurant in Washington Square who is so proud of what he's doing. He says, bring it on, park it right in front of my store. I have no problem with
Whoa.
It.
Whoa. Fighting words.
But not everybody feels that way.
Sure.
Not everybody
feels that way. I understand. Let's try to take one more call. Mark is calling from Harvard. Hi, Mark.
Hi. I actually did this 20 years ago in another city.
Oh, fantastic.
In a similar situation where I was the first person to have done that in a public space.
And what did you do and where did you do it?
It was in Memphis, Tennessee. I actually did it with a food cart rather than a truck. But the concept is the same. You've got mobile food. You've got it outside.
Mm-hmm.
What I learned from that is that there's two different kinds of customers you have. Some people are destination oriented, and some people are traffic oriented. And this is very critical because you could park a food truck in the middle of all the traffic downtown, and not get enough business to support it because the customers that are walking by don't want to stop. You know, they're going to another destination.
And the other kind of customer?
And the other kind of customer is destination oriented.
They say, I see.
Go to you because I want your food.
Got it, Mark. Thanks so much for the call, Ron Sarney. Does Mark have it right in terms of thinking about how to parse your potential customers?
Yeah, I think you have to have locations and put the trucks where people want the fare and at a price that they're willing to pay for it.
Well, with that, thank you for coming in here. Ron Sarney, co-owner of Boston's Grilled Cheese Nation Food Truck, president of the Boston Area Food Truck Association. Thanks so much and good luck to you.
Thank you so much.
As you seek to grow this new industry. And Cara Bruton, economic development director for the town of Brookline, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much.
And our own Adam Ragusea, thanks for your reporting and thanks for being a part of this as well.
It was a tough assignment.
Someone had to do it.
Yeah.
Stay with us. Coming up, Harvard men's basketball team heads to the Big Dance for the first time since 1946, plus a new exhibit explores contemporary Egyptian art. Stay with us. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.